brought to you by Penguin.
Illuminated by Water. Written and read by Malachy Tallock. Introduction. From the squat concrete bridge humming with Saturday traffic, we took the towpath east along the Forth and Clyde Canal. It was mid-morning, mid-November, and the air was chilly and damp. I guessed we would get rained on before our walk was done. The clouds had that look about them, dark around the edges, like eyes in need of sleep. Beyond a busy marina, packed with cruisers and narrow boats, some lived in, some swaddled in tarpaulin for the winter, things grew quiet. A few joggers, dog walkers, and a cyclist or two, but we were mostly on our own. Shoulder to shoulder on the narrow path, my partner, Roxanne, took the side with the trees and grassy banks, and I took the side with the water. I like canals, as a general rule. I like the way they're not quite one thing or another. In form, they take the shape of rivers, but in habit and as habitat, they're lakes stretched out across the landscape. Few things we humans build for our own convenience do much to assist the natural world, but canals, cleaned up, have become an exception. Insects, amphibians, fish, birds and mammals all make their homes in and around the water. Canals once helped sustain the industrial economy of this country. Now they help sustain other kinds of life. This one, as its name suggests, connects the Firth of Forth in the east to the Firth of Clyde in the west, bisecting Scotland at its narrowest point. 35 miles in length, it was opened in 1790, joining sea to sea and city to city. Glasgow lies at one end, Falkirk at the other. And until 1933, a series of locks provided a further link through the Union Canal to Edinburgh. Today, the Falkirk Wheel does the same job, but with added drama. At the water's edge, thick beds of bulrushes and reeds provide cover for birds. Not many on that day, just a few pairs of mallards idling in the shallows and a mottled grey cygnet begging for bread. On the opposite bank were moorhens emerging and vanishing among the vegetation, announcing themselves testily with brassy toots and honks. Like a lot of the walks Roxanne and I take together, this one was partly an excuse to be near water, and that proximity was an excuse to look for and wonder about the lives within. Almost everything along the canal led the eye in the opposite direction. The trees pointed upwards, and so did the spires of rushes and dried angelica. There were the flocks of field fares that came and went in gusts. There was the young buzzard that flapped one way and the female sparrowhawk that coasted the other. Even the water faced away from itself, the still surface reflecting the bare branches on the other bank and the pallid sky above. Like all mirrors, it was hiding as much as it revealed. Beyond a second bridge, a man with two fishing rods on the bank, lines already in the water, was casting a third as we passed. Attached was a chunky white float, and dangling beneath it, a fish. Silver and finger length, it was long dead, most likely. There are pike in this canal, ravenous hunters always looking for an easy meal, for which that would be the perfect bait. The man flicked the rod gently over his shoulder, and fish and float came down with a splash. A little farther along, we passed another angler just setting up. This one was accompanied by a young woman, hunched by the water in a canvas chair, staring at her phone.
Sample complete. Ready to continue?